Good morning, baseball fans. It is Sunday, March 24th. Opening day is upon us. We get opening day baseball this week, people. This week, we're so excited. And with that said, I am Susie. That is Kelsey. This is Bourbon and Baseball, All the Balls edition. And before we get started, we should probably give you the rated R warning because this will be a rated R podcast, not for the normal reasons, just for the reasons that I like to say a lot of four-letter words and possibly, probably, most likely have some inappropriate adult humor because, again, that is who I am as a person. So if that is not your jam, that is okay. You just should probably turn this off now and join us probably never, ever again. I don't know. Come back and see us sometime because I promise it's good content. It's just littered with four-letter words and inappropriate adult humor here and there. So with that said, Kelsey, how excited are you for opening day?
I cannot wait. I am having trouble wrapping my head around the fact that it's actually here. It's actually happening. And this is weird for me because I'm going to be on the East Coast this week. So on Thursday, when my Cardinals play for the first time, I'm going to be in the Philadelphia area. And I'm going to have a really fun time trying to figure out how to find a place to watch the Cardinals and the Dodgers play when I'm on the East Coast. And then I'm also going to opening night at the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs in Allentown, Pennsylvania, which is going to be a lot of fun. That's on Friday night. And then Saturday, I think we're going to go to the Phillies game. So it's just going to be a whirlwind because then I'm back here. I'm going to Busch Stadium for opening day the following weekend. And I'll actually be at Busch Stadium and Wrigley within the same 24-hour period. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You got so much baseball to like live baseball to ingest. And I'm so excited.
I know. I think I'm going to be at three major league stadiums and the minor league stadium within a week.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. Think of the content, Kelsey, all the content. Hey, so that answers my question. Cause my next question to you was going to be, do the Cardinals open up at home? But no, they do not. They open up in LA, which kind of makes me sad for you.
I couldn't hear you for a second because my AirPods I don't have my AirPods in and they just can. I think my husband pulled them out. And connected to the computer. So I have no idea what you just said, but yes.
Oh, good. Okay.
So I shouldn't say yes. I have literally no idea what you said.
Well, it's a very professional show that we run here, people.
I was panicking. What just happened?
That was cracking me up because I saw the look on your face and I was like, it's not that big of a deal, but I guess she has very strong feelings about this. I was asking about the Cardinals and the Dodgers and if the Cardinals opened up at home on opening day, but you answered my question saying that the Cardinals were, you know, in LA for the Dodgers opening day. So Miles Michaelis gets that start for the Dodgers. Yep. So who gets the Cardinals actual home opener then?
It was Lance Lynn, baby. Cardinals fan spirit animal, Lance Lynn. Let's go.
I need to know the over under on nut grabs. Went on that start.
We should add that to our betting list this week.
That should be okay.
Let's add that on the record. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if this is the first time you've ever watched any sort of Cardinal baseball, or you know, if you've never heard of Lance Lynn or ever seen Lance Lynn pitch on any other team, you know that he literally grabs his nuts after every pitch, essentially. Maybe sometimes even a couple of times. So
really, the more the better, because that means he probably would be, you know, in for longer.
That's true. He's an innings eater. That is what he is. That's what we can only pretty much your entire rotation is. I guess with that leads us into the best segue that I could have ever come up with, unintentionally even. And we're going to start a new segment on here called This Week's Bet on Vibes. And it's bets that you can't actually make. Well, I don't know if you can actually make them. I don't actually do any sort of gambling or betting, but maybe, I don't know, somewhere probably this could be bets somewhere, but I'm pretty sure that DraftKings is not going to have this line. But
we have it here at DraftQueen. Ooh,
yes. That's what we're going to do. Hashtag copyrighted, hashtag don't anybody steal that because that's going to be the best shirt idea ever.
It's ours now.
But yeah, these are the bets that you probably can't bet on, but we should probably bet on because they're just fun and, you know, we're going to bet on vibes. So
I'm interested in betting on. If I could bet on these things, I probably would be way more into it. But I, same as you, I have no experience with the actual in-game betting and I have no desire to. So yeah, we're making our own version.
We are going to make our own. And it's not, you know, most strikeouts per inning. Who the fuck cares about that? Not us. Nope. We would like to know the over-under on who will have the tighter pants in the 2024 season. Will that be Spencer Strider or Robbie Ray?
I'm going to keep a spreadsheet of these, Susie, and we'll put our picks in because this one we're going to have to circle back on. Maybe by mid-August, early September, we can, because Robbie Ray won't be back until probably July-ish.
Yeah.
We can check in on this and see and get feedback from our listeners. So listeners, if you have a pick as well, keep note, tweet them at us. Maybe we can put a tweet out and get some responses and add them to our spreadsheet and we'll see. I don't know what you win, but we'll think of something, surely. I don't know. Who's your pick, Strider or Ray?
I'm probably going to have to pick Spencer Strider. You know, he's got that curveball, that new added curveball of his that is just ridiculous. And so I think that's just going to give him some more oomph to his oomphness. And I don't know, again, if you don't watch either one of these teams, and you've never seen Quadzilla, drop the workout routine, Spencer Strider. It's not like I'm going to do it. I just want to see how exactly you get these calves. Not calves. Thighs.
Yeah.
I know my body parts, y'all.
Those quads, baby. Quads. I'm going to go with Robbie Ray because I think, you know, him coming off of Tommy John surgery, he had a little extra time, a little extra few leg days in there for the last year or so. And I also think he's going to be coming in mid-season where we're already having all of this trauma with how customizable the pants can be. And he might just have to size down if he wants them painted on. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll have to check back in on this, but place your bets.
Are there any dark horses that we should be keeping an eye out on?
I mean, Tommy Canley, for sure. Tyler O'Neill, he's with a new team.
Oh, okay.
He has Tyler Tight Pants.
Oh, that's his nickname?
Yeah.
Okay. Because my running joke is anyone that has these really tight pants, they have the schmedium pants. And so that's my running joke. So if you're new around here and you ever hear of us referring to somebody as having the schmedium pants, just envision Spencer Strider and or Robbie Ray or
examples.
So listeners, viewers on YouTube, if you guys have a sneaky pick that we are not aware of, drop them in the comments because we would like to know. Okay. Who's that girl on Twitter that has the best butt calendar? We need to ask her.
Oh, yeah.
You know, do you remember who I'm talking about?
Megan. Yeah.
Meg's something. Okay. So again.
She started our Hot Girls Like Baseball channel.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's what it is. So.
Meg's.
Okay. So we're going to have to see who's on the best butt calendar and incorporate that somehow, I guess. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. For sure. All right. So our next bet on vibes. Who is more likely to win a trophy for Clubhouse Vibes? The Red Sox? Or the White Sox people.
They're probably not winning any other trophies this year, but with that, Alex Cora, right? The manager of the Red Sox was quoted saying, I actually should pull up the actual quote because you tweeted at me and a few other people did too, because very big on vibes here. All for it. They do not give out trophies for vibes, unfortunately.
They should though.
But according to Alex Cora, if they give trophies for vibes, we're up there on the mood in the Red Sox clubhouse. So that got me thinking, wow, what other clubs right now would I think have comparative vibes to the Red Sox? And the White Sox are one we've talked a lot about, cultural rebuild. They really need to change the vibes in the clubhouse, but you don't look at them and think, I'm going to give them a trophy for vibes. Right. We're putting these two really both dark horses side by side here. Take your pick. I don't know. I think I might, honestly, right now, I might go with the White Sox. I think the turnover of their roster. And I know they just got rid of Dylan Cease, but they were at a point where major movement, regardless of what the change was, just something needed to be put in motion to change the vibes. And the Red Sox are so confused about anything and everything in the front office, on the field, from my perspective. So I think my vibes trophy is going to go to the White Sox.
Okay. I think I'm gonna have to go with the Red Sox, mainly because Martin Maldonado is on the White Sox. No, I'm just kidding. Maybe Martin Maldonado will be the vibe changer. Again, he's known for his great work ethic and working with the pitchers. And maybe he will just take Michael Fetty and Garrett Crochet and just turn them into sneaky Cy Young winners. I'm only half joking on Michael Fetty, and Michael Fetty's listening to this and being like, what the fuck? Why? Shots fired at me. I'm very sorry, Michael Fetty. It's really nothing at you.
That's true. That 0.81 batting average has no effect on a vibes trophy.
No, but they also have Max Stassi. Max Stassi's good on vibes. Mm-hmm, I don't know. They need, who they need to bring up? They need to bring up the literal vibe master. And he would be I don't think he's ever coming. I don't think he's coming up, but Brett, why am I blanking on Brett
Phillips? Yeah. If they want to win a vibes trophy, I couldn't agree more.
Brett Phillips would be the best ray of sunshine in that clubhouse. Mm-hmm. He could be the mascot. That's mean. I'm very sorry, Brett Phillips.
He's the vibes captain.
Yes. Really? He is. He's the glue guy. He's the best glue guy ever. He would just hype him up and just make him feel good about themselves. And we all need that in our lives. So,
okay, but you said you're picking Red Sox.
I am picking the Red Sox. And I didn't say anything about the Red Sox in that. And I just gave all of the reasons why the White Sox may be more high on vibes. I don't know. They've got some young people, like I'm 90 years old. They've got some young kids on the Red Sox that. Maybe, I don't know who the vibes person is on the Red Sox. They just have, I don't know. I will have to agree with you. I was going to try and pick the Red Sox just so that we weren't going to both pick the White Sox, but I have to agree. It's the White Sox.
I think the Red Sox as a franchise you would want to pick, right? And that's what's so befuddling about them, as much as everything that they're doing. It's the Red Sox.
Right.
And they are one of the most postseason winningest teams in the last couple of decades over recent times. So you don't think of them as this just tossed aside, well, as far as vibes go, we're up there sort of a team. But that's so I think that pulls you towards needing to give it to them. But sorry, Alex Cora. We're going with the White Sox here. Yeah. We'll have to circle back on that one. Yeah, around the All-Star break and see what the vibes
maybe,
are like.
Maybe they play it up for the Netflix documentary.
Quite possibly, yes.
Don't know.
That could change the dynamic quite a bit. We'll have to see. All right, this one is more hard numbers we got to lay down here. Our last bet on vibes for this week is the over-under on Lance Lynn nut grabs. Let's put it down. And then what am I going to have to, I'm going to have to count them while I'm there. Live reporting. I have my little microphone. Yes, I'm going to have a tally card. I'm going to add this to my scorecard for opening day and we will circle back on this.
There will be hash marks on your scorecard. Oh my God. I can't wait until we can clip this and then we can side by side.
It's happening. We're holding ourselves to it right here. I'm big on follow through. So the fact that we've said we're going to do it, we're doing it.
Also, not me trying to mathematically try to figure out an actual roundabout number. And I'm all, oh my God, Susie, I can't believe that I'm trying to actually do math and figure out this.
Right here. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay. You talk about that. I'm going to try and do some mental gymnastics on how many.
You know, we also have to maybe clarify. I'll have to find a YouTube clip or something because we'll need to clarify what qualifies as a full-on nut grab.
Okay.
This isn't one. So we'll clarify on that. Man, okay. I don't know. This is just a random number that I'm pulling out there. It's probably a little low, but I'm going to go with 26.
Wow. 26. Okay. All right. Again, I was going to try and do some sort of like mathematics. And okay. So if he faces how many batters for how many innings and that's too much math. It's too much math. So I'm going to just guess a number and I'm going to guess 53.
All right.
So we have 53 and 26.
And anywhere in between there, feel free to throw in your guesses. Again, we'll come up with some kind of fun. Maybe we can have a season long tracking document and whoever has the most win from these bets on vibes will give you some free merch or something. We'll think of
that's
something.
That's going to be fun. We'll think of something. It'll
make
be fun.
It worth your while.
Yeah. So again, if you guys.
As if it wasn't already. Come on.
Right. Right. I mean, our vibes should be prize enough, people. But, clearly. You know, we realize that stuff, you know, merch and that's more like it. So, well, that's okay. We will give you guys something. So let's move on to the quote unquote hot stove. There still has not been a ton of movement, but, you know, there's been some movement.
Opening in that week, and Jordan Montgomery is not on a baseball team. What is happening?
Well, apparently there are two teams still out there in long-term with long-term contracts that apparently he's deciding on. All right. I don't know. It's a little insane. It is absolutely a little insane. Again, he's Jordan Montgomery. Did you see what he did in the playoffs? Again, I realize that he's not, you know, a top of the line rotation guy. And I think maybe that is part of the issue. I mean, I don't think that is part of the issue. I know that is part of the issue, but he has been Mr. Consistency and he's a good three starter in most lineups. And in some lineups, he may be your ace or your two.
Absolutely.
in some lineups. So the fact that he hasn't, that you just haven't seen any offers out there just blow my mind. But, you know, whatever. That's fine. But one of the teams that I thought maybe was in contention for him because he did so much for that team was the Rangers. And the Rangers said, nah, bro, we're good. With our entire line changeup at maybe All-Star break, maybe a little bit earlier with, you know, Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer and Tyler Mahle. That's cool. We don't need you. But you know who we are going to sign? We are going to sign Michael Lorenzen. Okay, sure. For $4 million. And maybe if he doesn't work out as a starter, we will stick him in the bullpen. So I don't... $4.5 million. Go for it, Rangers, if that makes you feel better.
I mean, I think there's 29 other teams this would have been a good deal for. And I was kind of surprised he didn't get more. I mean, he has $2.5 million in incentives. And I heard him speak on Foul Territory the day after this deal came out. And he did say that he was specifically looking for an opportunity to be in the starting rotation. So as he should have been at this point. So good for him that he has solidified that opportunity, at least for the first half of the season. And what was the most interesting to hear him talk about was that like he felt like he was looking for a very fair market value, which I would say this is even lower probably than fair market value, at least has the potential to be up to $7 million, but that's where Max is out. And I don't know. It just sucks to hear that there were not more teams that were willing to even pay him a little bit more than this. There's just so much weirdness going on. He makes sense for the Rangers for the first half of the season, right? But he made a lot more sense on 10 other teams easily. And yeah, I'm glad he's got a deal.
The fact that he started the season with Detroit last season and then got traded to the Phillies and the Phillies used him for literally that one start where he got the no-hitter and then all of his subsequent starts, he got blown up and then they finally just moved him to the pen. I mean, he ended the season with the Phillies with a five, almost like a six ERA, like a 5.51 ERA.
Yeah.
I was all, wait, what? I don't know. So maybe the Rangers and their, I say, ability to.
Mike Maddux, baby. Like, that claw. You're going to put it on Michael Lorenzen's shoulder for 10 starts and he's going to be a new man. Let's go.
Okay.
So he talked a lot about how he actually didn't really stop throwing over the offseason because he had some mechanical stuff go wrong there at the end of last season. And I mean, I don't know. It's hard to speculate, right? I've heard so many people say things like, well, after the no-hitter, he would, you know, whether it was a certain level of fatigue or there was an injury that you could more or less pinpoint just from the fact that I think he threw close to 120 pitches or something like that to push himself to that milestone, which was surely worth it, but maybe not in terms of the numbers that then came out the rest of the season. But it sounds like there was something specific that he felt that he could get back in line with. And he certainly has his potential. You know, his ceiling is higher than a lot of other guys.
Yeah. So, okay. Again, in division rival for me personally, and I, as a baseball fan, I hope he does well for the Rangers. As a Astros fan, I hope he sucks. That is my
Michael Lorenzen going to own the Astros this season.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised. It's always the ones where you're all, I don't understand what's happening right now. What's going? It's just like the A's are our daddy. Who knows why it just always happens. So another big signing. And this is another one where I was a little intrigued by, but I gave that team and their fans the day and the weekend. And I was so excited for them. JD Martinez signs with the New York Metropolitans. And JD Martinez as the DH in that lineup with Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso and McNeil, and that it lengthens the lineup so much more. The fact that you're not having to use Mark Vientos as the DH or, heaven forbid, Daniel Vogelbach.
I don't even think.
Which I know.
Vogelbach doesn't have a contract, does he?
I want to say he was a non-roster invitee. I don't know if he made the roster. I will look that up, but I don't. They were so thrilled. All of my Mets fans were so absolutely thrilled.
No, we forgot about this. He signed. Wait, is this right? He signed with the Blue Jays?
Daniel Vogelbach?
Oh, yes. He signed he agreed to a minor league deal with the Blue Jays. I think we did talk about this.
Did we talk about
this?
Okay.
Yeah, 1 year, $2 million.
Oh, no, it's not. I'm so sorry. It's the other big barrel-chested white guy that I was thinking about. Luke Voit.
Oh.
That's who I was thinking about.
Daniel Vogelbach, Luke Voit, and Roddy Tellez are like, are they all the same person? A little bit. That's great. Just
big old, like, just big old barrel-chested. It's cracking me up. So, sorry, Mets fans, they're laughing at me now. That's okay. But the fact
is still trying to, he's vying for a bench spot there, but this signing definitely, makes that even less likely, I would assume.
Yeah.
Good point.
So congrats, Mets, that your position players, that 1 through 9 is longer. And then you got Francisco Alvarez over there that hopefully he will take another step forward and that will just help again, lengthen that lineup. So I am so thrilled that you guys got JD Martinez. And again, there will be more hits for y'all.
Yeah, kind of opposite approach for them coming into this year from last season when they were all very heavily invested in that starting rotation leading them to the postseason. So this year they're just going to slug the hell out of it.
Yeah. So I guess that's, like I said, I was going to give them the weekend to be super excited about it and just revel in this joy because there cannot be any joy taken in that starting rotation. I'm so sorry, Mets fans. I apologize. I love you all. I love you all because there's a huge contingency of Mets fans that follow us on Twitter and follow the show on Twitter. And so I love you guys. Just know that. And
I'll say it here. Maybe as a bet on vibes, but I think Jose Quintana is going to be a lot more solid for them than anybody is giving him credit for. Okay. I know he's a little older. I know he's not the most swing and miss kind of guy. But he hasn't been fully healthy in a while, and he has a hell of a competitive edge to him, too. So if they get anywhere close to the postseason, I think any team would feel good about rolling him out there.
Okay. Do we have any news on Kodai Senga and when he is supposed to come back? Mm. Is there any whispers of possibly coming back at the start of the season? I know that's not a possibility, but, May?
It says he has been cleared to throw. He will begin ramp up within a week. So that's great. Yeah. Inflammation is gone. So he's pretty much cleared from the doctors. Mendoza said this past Thursday. So just a few days ago. I mean, that could be huge for them by that timeline. So a 6-week ramp up. So he could be back by May.
Okay. All right. Well. Okay. So I take it back. I no longer give the Vibes Trophy to the White Sox. I'm going to give the Vibes Trophy to the Mets.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm doing. I'm retaking it. I realize that's probably not, you know, what actual betting is allowed to do. But you know what? We make our own rules here on the draft.
We do.
And so I no longer lock in my vote for the White Sox, and I'm locking in my vote for High on Vibes, Mets Clubhouse. Book it right the fuck now. All right. Zach Short, I guess, also made the Mets roster.
Oh, okay.
That was literally announced like today. I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so, you know, this Shamanai cut his hair. And now
that's true.
Sevy's going to try and make a comeback. Okay. That's it. New York Mets Vibes will not win a World Series, but will give the NL East a run for their money. That's what I'm going to go on.
Yeah. I've said this before and I'll say it again. I certainly think they're going to have more wins than last season, which again, at the beginning of the season is not, I mean, the beginning of last season, everybody was like, Mets domination, let's go. Clearly that was not the case. And so it is interesting. Even if you looked at their roster on paper last year and this year, I think you probably would still lean towards last year, but those vibes is what's going to take them to the next level this season. You're on
vibes, baby, vibes. I think we are. So another huge vibes winner over here is this segment is what I'm going to call players you should know that are not on your favorite team that you should know about. It's a very wordy title and one I'm keeping because I like it. If you guys do not watch any San Diego Padres baseball this season, maybe you should, strictly on the fact that their entire team is made up of converted center fielders or converted shortstops. And I just gave it away. I'm going to be talking about Jackson Merrill right now, guys. If you guys don't know who Jackson Merrill is, you should. Again, San Diego just says, you know what? We don't need outfielders. I got all converted shortstops. That's what we're going with. Mike Schultz, like, I guess that's going to work.
the Dodgers have no shortstops because the Padres have them all.
This is true.
I'm not sure how that happened, but
this is true.
Make it work.
So I'm going to give you guys a breakdown of Jackson Merrill in just a second, but I need you to know that Jackson Merrill, this comes from Sarah Langs, Langs on Sports on Twitter, and at 20 years and 336 days old, Jackson Merrill is the fourth youngest opening day starting center fielder in the divisional era. And apparently that divisional era started in 1969. Older than only 1989, Ken Griffey, who was 19 years and 133 days old. 1990, with Griffey again, he was 20 years old and 139 days old. And Don Pon in 1969, who was 20 years old and 143 days old.
Wow.
Your starting center fielder for the San Diego Padres, Jackson Peter Merrill. So I'm going to just call him JP because we're on that level.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, to differentiate him between all of the other young Jacksons that are trying to make it onto a club.
Yeah,
Jackson Chirico. I want to say maybe it was a popular name like 20 years ago.
It must have been. I don't everyone know. So, in 2000s was like, this is the name.
Had it, yeah.
My name.
So Jackson Chirico for the Brewers, Jackson Holliday for the Orioles, who did not make it on the big league roster. And so Jackson Peter Merrill, I'm going to call him JP because, again, one, to differentiate, and two, because we're like that. And I just like to give him nicknames. Yes. So he was born in Severna Park, Maryland, which I just found out is like a suburb of Baltimore. These are the things that I find out when I do research.
I thought you were going to say, which I just found out is a place. Me too.
That as well. I've never heard of Severna Park, Maryland. Really and truthfully,
one of those places you forget about, right?
Yeah. In my head, a lot of places, just if I don't have any sort of dealings with them on a day-to-day basis, they just kind of float above the things, right? And also the fact that I didn't realize that Chicago had a beach. Okay. Again, I don't, Baltimore is not in Maryland in my head. I don't know where I think Baltimore is, but sometimes I'm all, that's not in Maryland. I don't even know where I think it is, but it's not in Maryland. So anyhow, Severna Park, he went to Severna Park High School and he committed his junior year to the Army Black Knights, and then COVID hit, and he just used his time very wisely by working out and then gaining 30 pounds of muscle. I don't understand how one gains 30 pounds of muscle, but apparently you can by eating a ton of protein and lots of protein-packed things and then lifting heavy. I say this like I know what I'm talking about, but Kelsey knows, and that's who I got all of that information from. So, and then when he came back his senior year.
Yes. Eat a shit ton and lift very heavy things, but like literally a shit ton.
Then his senior year, he changed his commitment to Kentucky. And then he was like, all right, let me just bat 500. His senior year of high school. Well, I'm sorry, what now? Yeah, 500 people. You heard that correctly. with 13 home runs and 39 RBIs. And then he was basically on all of the prospect lists, and San Diego took him in the first round with the 27th overall pick. And he got a $1.8 million signing bonus, one of them little bonus babies, you know, and we say like, it's a little bonus. It's $1 million. It's a nice little bonus there. He started that 21 season in the Padres farm system, and he was in the Arizona Complex League. And then in 2022, he played rookie ball between their double A and single A team, the Tin Caps. Their double A team is the San Antonio Missions. And between those two leagues, he played 114 games. Okay, 114 games. And they said, you know what, JK, Jackson Merrill, JP, you are seasoned enough. He showed out in spring training. And I need you to know what he did in spring training, guys. In 13 games in spring training, he hit .351, a .400 on base, and a .595 slug, people. Okay. Woo. So as a general rule, if your slash line is a .345, you are a pretty good baseball player. Pretty, pretty good. Okay. So his OPS was a .995. I'm sorry, what? As a 20-year-old. Okay. As a 20-year-old. And Mike Schilt basically said that he earned it. He earned the spot to go to Seoul. So his literal first professional at bat was not on U.S. soil.
Isn't that wild? Yeah. He made his major league debut in Korea.
In Korea against the Dodgers. I didn't realize this. I don't know if I just missed this fact or if it wasn't advertised well enough. But did you know that whoever hit the first home run wins a car?
No.
Did you know? Okay.
Well, that's a fun little twist. Nice.
I was like, oh, I wasn't aware of that. Cool. That's great. But his first big hit was off of Michael Grove with a belt high fastball. And he is quoted saying, I think it's just one of the normal ABs I've been having since the start of spring. Very, you know, super, super
that
awesome.
Does.
Yeah. The first home run of the series was hit by the Dodgers, Mookie Betts, in the bottom of the fifth, which earned him an Ioniq 5 from Korean automaker Hyundai. But so we all know that that apparently the ballpark in Korea is a graveyard. And there were 4,003 singles hit on the first day.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what happened. I don't know if they turned off the humidifier or what, but the balls were flying the next day and they still didn't get out. However, his first hit was in any other field. And I say any other field, in 23 of the 30 ballparks, this ball that he hit for a double with an exit velocity of a 106.9 and a projected distance of 380 feet. He had to settle for a double, but in one of those 23 parks, Petco Park, you know, his home ballpark, it would have been a home run. And so then he would have hit the first home run and got a car. But no, it goes, of course, because it goes to Mookie Betts.
Of course.
But yeah, that was his first major league hit, was this 380 foot double in 23 of the 30 ballparks. Would have been a home run. That is Jackson Merrill, people. So I need you to keep an eye out on JP and just see how far he progresses this season. And the fact that when he went up there and those at bats, he didn't look overmatched. I think that is the biggest takeaway from all this, is that he belongs there. Some you know, mid 20-year-olds go up to bat and you're just all, absolutely not. That is not.
Yeah.
Nope. But this kid looks awesome out there. And I'm very excited to see what he does this season.
Well, I'll say it too. Like, just a few weeks ago, we were sitting here, the Padres don't have any outfielders. They're just going to roll Jerickson Profar out there and who else? So he was not on our radar the way that he should have been either. But this is why they were not particularly worried about it. So Jackson Merrill, respect, 2024.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm very excited. But like we referenced earlier, one of the other Jackson Holliday, who I really thought had a chance to make the opening day roster. And literally everybody else on the planet thought that Jackson Holliday was going to make it, but Jackson Holliday does not. He does not make it onto the big league roster. And I'm very confused by this because they had Colton Wong still up, who they just released.
I totally forgot they even brought him in. Yeah.
Yeah. Colton Wong apparently asked for his release and he was still on, like, the guys that were possibly going to make the roster. But Colton Wong's like, JK, I don't want to play for y'all. I don't think that's what he said, but he asked for his release. And so I'm all, oh, okay. But that is just insane to me. And Orioles fans, I know, are very upset about it. I also probably would be very upset if I was a Orioles fan. Not, you know, not like a baseball fan overall, but like a yeah. baseball Orioles fan.
But I guess I'm trying to see who's going to start at second base then.
What it will be, okay. according to FanGraphs roster resource, second base will be played by Jordan Westberg.
Okay.
Which they had Jordan Westberg, I want to say at third when we did our 9,003-hour long
yeah.
team review. I think we said that Jordan Westberg was going to be at third. And
it's funny, all these projected lineups that I'm seeing have Jackson Holliday in them. So it seems like most people thought he was going to be. Yeah. And Westberg was at third. I don't know. And then like,
but they still have Colton Cowser. They still have Colton Cowser on the bench.
Hell yeah.
Cowser still maybe in there. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
I think it was our friend of the show, Dallas Braden, who put out something about the Jackson Holliday news saying only in Major League Baseball do you have teams that are not putting the best players out on the field on opening day. And I thought that was interesting.
Oh, no, it wasn't. I don't think it was Dallas Braden. It was the other guy from Baseball Is Dead. It was our oh, good Justin buddy, Haven. Very analytical. Yeah. Yes.
Justin Havens. You're right. It was him.
Justin Havens. Jay Hay.
Jay Hay. Oh, sorry, Jay Hay. I should have known it was you.
I could definitely see how we can get Jay Hay and Dallas Braden confused, though, because for sure.
Well, they've both been putting out a lot of good takes on things this past week.
Have.
On a number of things we're talking about today. But
that was the other one that I was very confused on, that why the Orioles still had him up. Nick Maton. They still have Nick Maton up.
No.
And I was like, why? I don't understand. And I guess positional depth? I don't know. I was very confused by that. Why or how? So Orioles fans, please enlighten me. Tell me why Nick Maton was still up. As of yesterday, Nick Maton was still up. I don't know about today, Sunday, this morning, if any major moves have been made, and I'm not aware of it, which is fine.
It is that time where those sort of things are starting to be solidified. So yeah, we could already be behind the times in a couple hours from now.
Yeah. So but Ryan Stowers, I guess they sent Ryan Stowers back down too. Mm. And poor Ryan Stowers. I feel bad. I'm all, please.
No.
Please let somebody give him a chance.
They're just so stacked, like you said, and especially in certain positions. But Jackson Holliday is Ryan Stowers players to, yeah, Kyle.
I meant Kyle Stowers. I'm very sorry. Sorry, Kyle Stowers.
There's a lot of Ryans and Kyle and Jacksons.
Yeah.
He's like WTF. We're going to basically like the most popular names in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Sorry. Going on.
He's like the super exciting player that as fans, we're just really excited to watch and we want to see him. But developmentally, like there are some clear benefits to having him continue to get reps in the minor league system. Jackson Holliday just doesn't seem like one of those guys. You know, he's kind of more in that Jackson Merrill camp of where you're like, I don't know. I know he's only 20 years old, but this guy's ready. And so that's what I don't think should necessarily be a factor. And you do start to think like that you start to use that word because yeah, with him, it's no secret he is better than players that are making the roster.
There was someone on Twitter that had quoted a Mike Elias quote and was like, here is 1,019 words from Mike Elias on why Jackson Holliday did not make the opening day roster. And it was essentially all of those words, breaking it down to Jackson Holliday has only played 100-ish games in all of the minor leagues, 145, I think, in two seasons of minor league ball, 145. And basically, they want him to get everyday at-bats against left-handed pitching, not at the major league level.
Sure.
The
thing that I do recognize that is tricky with these young guys coming up is you do have to give them opportunity to play every day. So you're not going to bring Jackson Holliday up and, only have him face right-handed pitching. So, okay. Yeah. All right.
So it makes sense when you take out the Phantom part of it and you take out his overall numbers of it. It just kind of sucks because, like you said, it does kind of point more towards service time manipulation than they really care about the development of their players. I kind of think that they do, though, but also that he does need to season against left-handed pitching. I want to say that his left-handed pitching stats in the minors was mid-750s, I want to say, if I'm remembering correctly. But then again, I could be totally off. So, Orioles fans, if you're here, please let me know.
Because they've also had their nose more in the specifics of following, every single one of his at-bats and his journey through the minor leagues already. I don't know. It's just really interesting that most, ESPN, like FanGraphs, like every major publication, I think had predicted him to be on their roster. So it's kind of interesting that they went against all of that, but I'm not sure how they predict those sorts of things. It might just be with hard numbers and less observationally.
Yeah. And if guys on the roster don't have any more roster moves, like going back down to AAA options. Thank you. And so I want to say maybe that was probably part of the issue. And I was trying to look up the stats against left-handed pitching, but Baseball Reference said, no, thank you. Service unavailable. So you do not get those.
They don't want you to know.
They don't. They're trying to keep that a secret. So again, Baltimore Orioles fans, if you know, or if anybody else knows, please drop them in the comments. Tell us. Slide into real DMs and let us know.
Yeah. Here's what I want to ask you. The real question is, do we see Jackson Holliday in the big leagues this season?
I think so. And it's going to suck even worse when it's after the deadline where if he wins like rookie of the year or whatever.
Yeah,
or,
it would suck if his rookie of the year eligibility is not kept intact for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yep. So I don't know when that breakdown is or like when that cutoff is for that.
Yeah.
I know that rookie of the year like eligibility is based on at bats.
Yes. So you have to have under a certain number of at bats. Yeah. I think it matters. I think it matters less when he comes up and more about having a certain number or less of at bats.
Mm-hmm. But now there is an actual date cutoff for when service time can start, right?
Yes, in terms of like it being yes to serve this
counted towards
service, a year of service time.
Yeah, like when they can. Okay, so
there's all kinds of factors.
Yeah, so if my internet was working properly, I could probably Google that and tell you guys, but it's not. So you also don't get that information. Sorry that I don't have that story in my brain. Yeah. So, but it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see. So, did you wake up early for any of those Korea games, though, Kels?
Not at the beginning of it. I did get up like a little earlier than usual so that I could watch, a good amount of it. But I did not see the beginning of it, which is why I did not see. We'll do a little Korea series recap here for you. I did not see Chan Ho Park, who was the first Korean player in Major League Baseball like 30 years ago. He threw out the first pitch to Ha Seong Kim in the first game. And you said that he had a very special jersey made for the occasion.
It was a blasphemous jersey. And I understand why they did it. Because it was the two teams that he had played for that were now facing off. But it was a half Dodgers, half Padres jersey. And I need Dodgers fans and Padres fans to chime in and let me know. Am I the only one that felt a little weird about that? What's happening right now? I don't want to see that. That's not cute. I don't like that at all. So I need other people to chime in, to let me know if those feelings are valid or not. But, it was great. It was great. And I understand why that happened and why they made that monstrosity, but the fact that it was on there, it made me icky. That was that feeling. So, but I don't think it was the ass kicking that the Dodgers had anticipated those games to be.
Yeah, no, they were very, both games were very competitive in completely different ways. But
yeah,
you also think, so the Cardinals and Cubs, when they played at the London series last year, they each team took one of the games. And that's what you honestly want to see. That's what baseball wants to see too, when they travel all that way for those games. So yeah, the Dodgers won the first game 5-2, but the Padres were leading for the whole first half of that game until the seventh inning, I believe. And then their bullpen came out and slowly it just unraveled.
So last season, apparently this is an actual one of those stats, the San Diego Padres was like the unluckiest team in baseball.
Yes. Yes.
So when Kelsey says that they were winning by the majority of the time, yes, they were winning the majority of the time. And this play, when the ball literally went through Jake Cronenworth's glove, which he got that ball, and he would have made the play, would have been an inning-ending double play.
Yeah.
Everything after that, it just went downhill.
Yeah.
And I need to know. We can't continue. We can't continue the unlucky streak, Padres. We cannot. We can't do it. But it just, I was like, what? Oh, my God. Yeah, did that really happen? It so happened. Oh.
I was awake by that point, and I immediately thought of the Padres fans. Okay, are we having nightmare flashbacks? You're probably like, am I awake right now, or am I still dreaming? Nightmare flashbacks to 2023, because they lost so many late-inning games. With things like that, there was no, pinpoint issue particularly. And then right after that happened to Jake Cronenworth, his next at bat, like in the next half of the inning, he hit one straight to deep center field that, again, I'm sure in 23 ballparks in the U.S. would have been a home run, but it was caught. So it was a rough 10 minutes there for Jake Cronenworth.
He said, what? Fuck y'all. I'm gonna make my own luck, because he went off in the second game. He made up for it.
Yeah, so game two, the Padres won 15-11. The craziest thing about this game, which you kind of already alluded to, was that there was only two home runs in the game. When you see a score like that, you're like, slugfest, which, like, I guess it kind of was, but because of the stadium, only two of those runs came off of home runs. And it was notable. You know, we had our episode with Tom last week where we all kind of were like, man, fuck this Mookie Betts guy. Why is he good at everything and just so damn likable? Yeah, Mookie Betts, while playing shortstop, which he has not played really ever professionally, regularly, he had 6 hits, 7 RBIs, and a home run through the first two games of the season in Korea. And yeah, I mean, he was the offensive highlight on both sides. The only other home run was Manny Machado.
Yeah, and he hit a ball that he pimped a sack fly because he legitimately thought it was a home run. And again, in most parks, it probably would have been, but no, it was a sack fly. And I guess Gochuk Park is like freaking huge. And, you know, they're like, oh yeah, we didn't have that much offense in the first game. Let's try and juice these balls just a tiny bit, but that didn't even. Yeah.
Well, a big part of what got it off to that start was Yoshinobu Yamamoto's major league debut. He went only an inning when he was removed after 43 pitches before recording an out in the second inning. He allowed 5 earned runs on 4 hits. And his ERA currently stands at 45 after that start. He looked really nervous. Did you read that?
Yeah, he did. He looked really nervous. But maybe this will be like when we did the 40-man find. And I told you guys that in one of the games in Japan, he gave up like 8 earned runs or something like that. And then the next game, he went and struck out 84 people. I don't think it was 84 people. I think it was like 16. But he went off and he was like, I got this, guys. Just don't worry about it. I got it. So maybe in this maybe in his next Yamamoto start for the Dodgers, it will be the revenge of Yamamoto. But
it's against the Cardinals, so probably.
Oh dear.
Don't worry. It will be. It'll be great.
That's not good for me. I have 2 Cardinals players. That's not so good for me. Dang it. But I heard a stat that was absolutely balls insane. That apparently he has only been in all of the innings and all of the games that he has ever played, he's only ever not recorded an out in the first inning 2 times in his entire career. 3 times?
Wow.
Something like that. Like, he has never – this is not the pitcher that he is, obviously. So
yeah, and by no means are the Dodgers front office sitting around being like, oh, my God, we just wasted $300 million. No, it's fine. No.
But, you know, nerves and playing in that, you know, against all of that. And then all of this – all of the – Shohei news that we're gonna discuss here was also, it broke the evening before, and then I'm sure that the morning of, people were talking about it, so who knows if that had anything to do with it. And the fact that Yamamoto's translator now kind of has to do double duty and be the in-game translator for Shohei, I don't know if that played into it at all, but I feel like it had to have, just a little bit. But
yeah, he did give a quote, I think, to ESPN saying something along the lines of, I don't know much about it, so no, it didn't really affect me. But of course, that's what you're going to say. He's not looking for excuses. But yes, we have no idea. We can only speculate as to how that kind of affected the climate for the whole clubhouse that day.
Yeah. So
very weird.
And we'll hit on the Shohei news here in just a little bit, guys, but we have other news to hit on first. So just be patient.
There's so much drama. We got to talk about the MLBPA, the Players Association, first, because the other big storyline that has been kind of on the back behind the curtain of baseball is that player leadership from the MLBPA at the minor league and major league levels have called for the ousting of Deputy Director Bruce Meyer, who is known to be quite close, or, you know, assumed to really have Scott Boras really has Bruce Meyer's ear, I think is the assumption and kind of the narrative.
And
potentially the issue here. Yes. So they want to fire Bruce Meyer and replace him with former MLBPA lawyer, Harry Marino. An informal vote was held on the call, but no action had been taken, according to a report which also stated that Tony Clark organized the call after the circulation of a text chain among player reps that doubted Meyer's leadership. So this has just been like an ongoing thing. Tony Clark is the only one who has the power to fire Bruce Meyer and replace him with Harry Marino. And you were telling me before we started recording that the minor leaguers are really the ones that are rallying for this to happen. And Bruce Meyer is the one that really got them into the union and has balanced the playing field a little bit in that regard. And now in turn, it's kind of backfiring against him. But is this really, what I'm understanding is this is really all around the fact that the players union seems to serve the top tier players and the Scott Boras level clients like Max Scherzer and, you know, the guys who are getting the big money, and in the middle class and the lower class players, if you will, are really getting the short stick. And now that the minor leaguers are a part of the union, there are even more of those types of players that are looking to, you know, balance things out. Is that where this is really coming from?
I don't really know if it is or not. I kind of feel like maybe that's it. And if it is, Tony Clark, I guess, just sealed their fate by bringing in these other guys. Like, I don't know. I mean, there's been, we always have the discussion of the haves and the have nots, the mm-hmm. Scott Boras clients and then the non-Scott Boras clients. And it's just, I can't believe that this is happening, I guess. I don't really know. It's really interesting to say the least about if this happens, how much does the temperature, I guess, change about things? Because essentially both sides feel, like the owner side and the player side feel, that legitimately nothing will get done unless significant playing time is missed. Mm-hmm. And that's not good for anybody. No. And it's not good for
baseball. This is just terrible. It's a terrible narrative for baseball. It's terrible that this is the kind of headlines that you're reading about for the sport. And it does seem like, for whatever reason, like this kind of drama comes up in baseball more than in other professional sports. And I don't think that's just because we're following it more. Like, I couldn't agree more. It's just bad for the sport.
Yeah. And so I don't know. We'll be watching this and kind of figuring out along with y'all what is really happening. But there's so much, I guess, like other stuff happening that it's kind of gotten pushed to the back, because I really feel if the other news hadn't happened, this probably would be the front page cover kind of news. But, you know.
Oh, it's not great. This is a little more nuanced, I guess, in terms of like how it will play out over time too, because it mm-hmm. definitely will, I would assume, ultimately affect the CBA negotiations and all of that, which we were already anticipating because of how badly and drawn out it went last time. But this is all it's coming to a head from how weird this offseason has been, which obviously we've talked about a lot, of how these contracts are all not falling in place, and how players like Eddie Rosario are getting minor league deals and
Montgomery is still not signed.
It's all part of this like bigger story of things that players at different levels and agents are upset about. So yes, more clarity to come for sure. But all of that to be said, the top story of this week, we talked a little bit about it on Wednesday night in our episode with Tom, is the Ohtani gambling investigation. There has been so many confusing things that have come out about this, because it seems like the story changes. It was changing like every hour, right? When it first came out. And then it was weird that Major League Baseball didn't announce an investigation into it like immediately, but don't worry. Like they like to do Friday night, 6 p.m. hoping as few people will see it as possible, I guess. I don't know. They did finally come out and say Major League Baseball has been gathering information since we learned about the allegations involving Shohei Ohtani and Ipe Mizrahi from the news media. Earlier today, our Department of Investigations, the DOI, began their formal process investigating the matter. So they're doing their due diligence. What is the latest that we've heard on this?
It's insane, people. It is absolutely insane. If you guys haven't been following this, so in my head, multiple things have gone down and I'm like, wait, did that happen before? Did that happen after?
Yeah.
And so I'm going to kind of line by line kind of go through this. There is a ESPN article by Tisha Thompson. Tisha, not Trisha. Tisha Thompson, that I will link in the show notes, that gives this article the breakdown. And again, there's bullet points in here and there's more nuance in the article than what I'm about to give. If I read this word for word, we would be here for 9,003 hours again. So 7:30 Eastern Standard Time on Sunday, 8:30 a.m. Monday in Seoul. And that's another part of this. The fact that all of this was breaking while things were happening on another, like, half of the world, around the world. Mm-hmm. And that time difference is so, it adds another layer in here for me. And so Sunday night, basically, Rob Manfred, while in Korea, learns that something's happening concerning Ohtani. 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday, ESPN contacts Ohtani's agent, Nez Bolello, to ask about all of this, including Ohtani's name, appearing to be on two wire transfers, totaling $1 million. The transfers happened in September and October. 5:30 on Monday, a crisis communications spokesman for Ohtani, who had just been hired, responds to ESPN. Over the next several hours, he and an ESPN reporter talk at various times. 8:30 Monday night, that spokesman for the first time says Ohtani paid the debts on behalf of Mizuhara. The spokesman for Ohtani, I need you to hear me when I say this, okay? Mm-hmm. Said that Ohtani paid the debts for Ipe. He says Bolello went to Ipe, who finally came clean to him, and that was the truth. And that Ohtani told Bolello he had covered Ipe's debts in $500,000 increments. The spokesman quotes Ohtani as saying, "Yeah, I sent several large payments. That's the maximum amount I could send." The ESPN reporter, knowing the spokesman worked for Ohtani, wants to hear it from Ipe himself. So the spokesman says he will work out that meeting. 9:05 Tuesday night, the Ohtani spokesman confirms to ESPN that the gambling debt amounted to at least $4.5 million. 10:30 Tuesday night, Ipe speaks with an ESPN reporter by phone for 90 minutes. The interview has been arranged and is attended by Ohtani's spokesman. So at first, when this whole story broke out, it just said that Ipe had talked to the reporters, and right, nowhere was a spokesman mentioned to that. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that maybe that's why all of this is coming out and why the story changed, because there was nobody with Ipe from Ohtani's camp. And now we find out that there is, in fact, someone from Ohtani's camp with Ipe. So Ipe tells ESPN he met with Boyer at a poker game. David Fletcher, who was both friends with Ohtani when they both played, was also at. That's all. David Fletcher, what are you doing? Oh, okay. Sure. It goes on and says that Ipe loses a lot of money at this point in time. He couldn't share it with Ohtani because he was ashamed of it, and he was trying to make ends meet, trying to keep up with the lifestyle of Ohtani. And now, by this time in early 2023, Ipe's debts had ballooned to $4 million. And that's when he says he went to Ohtani for help. He says he feared losing Ohtani's trust, and he also feared for his safety, that someone might come to his house. The quote is, "I explained my situation." This is Ipe talking. "I explained my situation, and obviously Shohei wasn't happy with me, but he said he would help me." Asked if Ohtani knew the person owed money was a bookie, Ipe says his friend didn't have any clue. And that part kind of like tracks with me. I feel like Shohei is kind of like a golden retriever puppy. He's just, and that's just me being, yeah, that me being like naive and I guess wanting to see the best in people. I don't know, but for me, that tracks. And Ohtani agrees to pay the debts, right? They send $500,000 increments over 8 or 9 months, and they add loan to the description field, all right? Ipe declines to tell ESPN the full amount he lost, but confirms it's at least $4.5 million. And my wife doesn't even know about any of this until right now. How do you hide that you're in debt for $4.5 million? And if you're living paycheck to paycheck and you're in so much debt that your wife doesn't know, I don't understand that, but I don't know. He says that people, teammates would be gambling all the time, and Shohei would say, "Why are they doing this? Gambling is not good." He would make comments like that. And so 6 a.m. Wednesday morning, the Dodgers open the season. Ohtani gets two hits and is seen in the dugout laughing with Ipe in the final minutes of the game. 9 a.m. Wednesday, an MLB source says officials are aware of what Ipe told ESPN the previous night, that Ohtani had covered his debts. The source says MLB still has not heard back from federal authorities. 10 a.m. Wednesday, after the game, the Dodgers hold a meeting on the clubhouse where team owner Mark Walter tells the players a negative story is coming, according to a team official. Ipe apologizes and tells the team he has a gambling addiction. Andrew Freeman stands up and says Ohtani has helped to cover Ipe's losses. The team official and others present says on the way back to the hotel, this is where I was very confused. Okay. On the way back to the hotel, Ohtani starts asking questions about what had been said in the clubhouse. The Ohtani spokesman told ESPN and his representatives say that when Ohtani told them he didn't recognize Ipe's version of the events. According to the Dodgers official and Ohtani spokesman, Ohtani's representatives had continued to rely on Ipe to communicate with Ohtani while they were dealing with the situation. And Ipe did not tell Ohtani what was happening. According to the Ohtani spokesman, Ohtani discovers for the first time Wednesday that money is missing from his account. So you mean to tell me this entire time that all of this is going on, Yamamoto, who speaks English, remember?
Yeah.
Yamamoto speaks English, not super well, but he speaks English. Yamamoto's interpreter doesn't say, I don't understand how this entire time nothing is relayed back to Shohei.
Yeah.
I guess in Japanese, and that they're only listening to Ipe. So now you're insinuating essentially that Ipe mistranslated or didn't tell the full story to Shohei in Japanese and is now telling other people in English something else. And I'm all, wait, what? So Wednesday, 11:30, Shohei's spokesman says Ipe's lying. And now this is when all of the flurry happens, that all of this has come about. Because of the seriousness, there's still not any sort of ending to this. The Ohtani spokesman says that Ipe is despondent and needs to explain his situation to his family, and that by 1:45 he will have a new statement, because Shohei's lawyers basically told ESPN that they have to kill the story because it's not right. And we're all like, wait, what now? 2:30 Wednesday, the Dodgers fire eBay immediately after learning about the alleged theft. 3:55, ESPN reaches eBay by phone. He says he lied in his previous interview. Okay, this I'm going to read word for word. These are the exact questions that were asked. When did Ohtani become aware of the situation? They told me I can't answer anything, he says. Ohtani's representatives, are they representing you? No. Are you taking any form of payment to tell me these things? The reporter asks, no. Have you made any kind of agreement to say these things? No. You're doing this of your own volition and free will? Yes. Did you bet on baseball? No. Did you lie to Shohei? Yes. ESPN asks if he has ever purposely misinformed Ohtani while interpreting the issues the reporter is asking about. Ipe says, no, I have never done that. ESPN reporter texts him with the final question. Did you take the money from Shohei's accounts without his knowledge? There's no response. 4 p.m. Wednesday, the Ohtani spokesman tell ESPN what has actually happened. He didn't know any of it. He didn't know there was some sort of inquiry after the game. That's when he found out. He didn't know what the F was going on. You want me to believe that Shohei didn't know anything was going on? Not anything? That nobody in the clubhouse said anything to Shohei about this before Wednesday night? That leads me to believe that obviously there's many layers to this game, to this story here. And I just think that most of it is bullshit. And now it has come out that he apparently never went, that eBay never went to UC Riverside. It says that in the Angels media guide, apparently it says that he went to UC Riverside. How long was eBay with the Angels? And apparently it has been in this media guide for however many years. And just now it's coming out that, oh, just kidding, he never went to UC Riverside. And that, and now, apparently, the way that Ipe started his career, I guess, was reported that he started in the Red Sox organization. And apparently now that is false. And the reason, I guess, that was reported was because he was Chris Martin's translator, who was with the Red Sox when they were with the Nippon Ham Fighters or whatever. That's why that whole thing got convoluted. But the fact that it again says in the media guide that he got his start in the Red Sox organization, nobody from the Red Sox, when they played the Red Sox, saw this and was like, I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
Is it true? I don't think it is.
I don't know, man. This is a very tangled web, and it's impossible to know what is true and what is not. But it's super sketchy, and that sucks because it seems at this point it's impossible that this won't taint Ohtani in some way. Like, even if it just leaves us with questions at the end of the day. I saw you posted something, you shared something this morning that there was someone who is a bookie involved with this gambling ring that said the bets were placed by Ohtani. So we've even seen stuff like that come out. It's so hard to know what is even remotely true. And all we can really do is kind of wait for it to come out. But then it's also, I'm trying to accept this fact, like, we will never really know what happened, because there is part of me that thinks it's awfully convenient to pin something like this on Ipe so that we don't, you know, lose the face of baseball and have this be a scandal that is so much worse for the sport if it has anything to really do with Ohtani. And if it affects his playing time at all, like, I have tickets to go to a Cubs Dodgers game, two teams that I want to see lose 162 games this season, but I am going because I want to see Shohei Ohtani play.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I'm sure
absolutely.
That there, I mean, that's just, you know, my personal tie to it. It's very easy to see why it is detrimental to the sport of baseball on every level to have anything even remotely negative about Shohei Ohtani come out. And so it does seem like that it is very productive to have this narrative of he is the victim play out. But, you know, to what extent they can prove that, it's a lot harder, I think, to sell stories like that and keep the truth under wraps. So to some extent, I do think more will come out than would have, you know, even 20 years ago without the internet and the level of sleuths that we have now, but
absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know how much.
So, you know, going back to the tweets that you had said, it reminded me of one of the other tweets that I had put out, because apparently the illegal gambling bookie guy was literally telling people that Ohtani was one of his clients, like trying to garner more business for himself. Okay. Oof. So you mean to tell me that legitimately all of Boyer Bauer's clients are on the, obviously they're not on the up and up because they're placing illegal bets with you, but nobody breathed a word to this to anybody else? Never, ever. The fact that this is only now coming out, that Shohei apparently is mixed up in some sort of gambling thing, you cannot tell me that someone did not go to TMZ or random podcasters. Do you know how many podcasters are out here? Do you know how many podcasters would jump on the fact that, oh, are you kidding me? Shohei Ohtani is mixed up in gambling? Just for the clickbait, even in and of itself, they'd be like, absolutely, let me run with this. And we're just going to run with it and not be based in facts or anything. someone somewhere, unless I'm unless of course I've missed it somewhere, if for some reason I've there it is out there, please show me, let me know. Also, so the other tweet that you had referenced saying about the that Shohei was actually placing the bets on the, this is the actual tweet that says, on the Sports Junkies podcast, which obviously I don't listen to, but maybe I should, famous sports handicapper and better Brandon Lang, who was played by Matthew McConaughey in Two for the Money.
There's a movie about this guy.
I've never heard of that show.
Me neither, but I do love Matthew McConaughey, so yeah. I might check it out later.
All right. Said the bets are by Shohei Ohtani, per Lang's inside source. The bets by Ohtani were on soccer. He says more than $4.5 million. Again, there are so many layers to this, and I don't understand it. And I just feel like if Shohei Ohtani is, in fact, a degenerate gambler, there's no way that he would have deferred all of this money.
Yeah, that's a good point. I also was like trying to tell my husband about this in a way without being as confused as I am about it. And he was like, I mean, even if they cover it up now, like if he is a gambler, if he has a gambling addiction, this is not going to be the last time that something happens. Like if he, you know, really is an obsessive gambler. So
again, I just don't understand how we get from, we don't know shit about Shohei to Shohei has a dog to Shohei's married to now Shohei is a degenerate gambler. So there's really only, I say only, two situations, but no, there's like multiple situations. Like one, Shohei is this great guy that doesn't know anything about gambling that is just covering eBay's debts, which I feel like maybe the most plausible answer. I really want this.
Yeah, because there's this one side of it where he literally doesn't even know and eBay stole from him. There's this middle where it's like he did know, but he was genuinely just trying to help someone out who was in a bad situation, who was very close to him and is not probably aware of the legality surrounding it, especially because it wasn't on baseball. I do believe they didn't bet on baseball. That I think. And maybe that will be the thing that kind of keeps it from getting gnarlier for anyone. But and then there's this other whole side of it where, no, Ohtani is actually the one with the gambling problem.
Right. And
it
just using eBay as a...
all of those. Yes. What?
This 30 for 30 is going to be
what we get.
Fucking amazing. What do you guys think, people? Please.
What is your take? I don't even know what I think. I think the Cubs fans are going to be nasty to him at Wrigley Field. And I will provide as much live coverage as I can. I'm going to be sitting behind the Cubs dugout at this game, and all the most diehard fans, especially because they really wanted Ohtani, and the Cubs fans really believed they were getting Ohtani. Okay. So if he's playing, assuming he's playing at this game and the Dodgers Cubs series next weekend, that first weekend in April, I think you're going to see some interesting signs and some chants from Cubs fans about Ohtani's alleged gambling, but we'll see.
Oh my God. Like I said, I truly want to say that Shohei didn't know about gambling and just is covering base debts and is okay. Well, I didn't realize that me covering a gambling debt was going to get me in trouble. So
yeah,
eBay, I need you to take it
for sure.
That's kind of key for me, but I understand why. So I think that's where I land. That's what I want to believe. When I told this to my husband, he's like, no, eBay's taking the fall for him. Shohei's the gambler. You watch. And I'm all, don't tell me that. I don't think my heart can take that. He goes, why do you think his life was so secretive before? And I was like, don't do that. I don't want that to be the reason. And he goes, watch.
I have Ohtani high stock.
Angels, this would not come out. You watch. And I'm all, but then the cynical
side. I really have like high socks, like baseball high socks that have Ohtani's face on them that I wanted to wear.
Oh, that's not going to be good for you.
I don't know if I can do it now.
I don't think you can wear those. Not to the Cubs game. No. You could wear those. Like when the Dodgers play the Astros, you could probably wear those. I don't think you'll get messed with too much there, but like you can't wear it to the Cubs. That's not, that won't legitimately be safe for you. Like that's just, like,
I was ready to wear my high socks for you, Ohtani, but now I don't know if I can open myself up to this kind of, I don't know. They've got the new betting play, the sports book right outside Wrigley Field now too. So there's so many good jokes.
That's the fucking crazy part about all of this is that the fact that gambling is so not allowed and is so against rules for everybody. But then let me just shove all of the betting in your face all of the fucking time. And not only can you bet through your phone, let me just place bets outside of the stadium. Also, so crazy. I grew up in Vegas, right? And growing up in Vegas, we didn't have any professional sports teams. Because we didn't have any professional sports teams, because all of the bets happened in Vegas. That's where you had to go to gamble.
Yeah.
And so when professional sports came to Vegas, I had already moved, but it already blew my mind. I mean, like the hockey team came and then football followed and it broke everybody in Vegas. They were like, oh my God, we have a professional sports team and now we can bet on them. And they're here. we can do that and that's not illegal. Cool. We love that. And it just blew my mind. So
it is very weird to see the giant DraftKings sports book that is right outside where the Captain Morgan Club used to be at Wrigley Field. And I have not been in there, but it is quite the spectacle. And yeah, I mean, the game is making, everyone is making so much money off of it now. And my husband and I were talking last night just to the debate of, now that it is legalized, is it better or worse, or maybe, I mean, probably not one way or another, to have it regulated in any way, shape or form, because it's like any number, you could, you know, argue this about any number of things,
right?
Things that are legal or illegal. Is it better to have them legal and regulated if people are going to do it anyway? And, you know, there's certainly an argument for that. And to some extent, I'm sure it is safer in regards, but it also like perpetuates it as being this thing that I'm sure a lot of people didn't do before and now could potentially have problems with. It's so weird.
Yeah, I'm lost in all of this. And again, as a not a betting person, like not as a gambling person, I don't understand most of it.
I don't know how it works enough to, God, I hate when they do like the betting odds and stuff. And obviously there's such a huge market for it. So almost every sports podcast is capitalizing it on one way or another. And we're like over here, who's gonna have tighter pants though? You know, because I don't know what plus 500 means.
Yeah. And one of your friends, actually, I had to ask them, I'm all, so the plus is the good side or the minus is the good side? Which one's the good side?
And I don't, it's because I don't care.
Yeah. Well, and then I didn't understand what, I was like, so if I bet a dollar, how much do I get back? And they're like, oh yeah, no, if you bet a dollar, you're not going to get anything back because that's the plus side. I'm all, I don't understand. Wait, what? I was like, so I only win money when the minus side people do good? And they're all, absolutely. I'm like, I don't want to do that. What if I, but that's, and they're like, well, that's betting, that's gambling. So if I want to bet that the Astros win the World Series, my odds are like plus 500 or something. And they go, yeah, no, you have to bet a significant amount of money in order to make like half of that back. Well, that math doesn't math. And as a person who doesn't math well as it is, that just breaks my brain even more. And I'm all,
basically the only thing, it's the higher risk, the higher reward. And
yeah,
I'm very risk averse. So that is why it does not interest me in the slightest.
Yeah, no. And so I'm like, no, we won't be doing that. I won't be doing any of those. No, thank you. No, I have other things that I would like to burn money on, you know.
Absolutely. Yes. Come on. I got to go get my opening day manicure, baby. Right. Save my money.
I saw some of those. I'm like, I don't love my team enough to do that. I don't love baseball enough to get
I'm not getting a team logo, but I am going to get, I think I'm going to do all white with the, and then the, just
the red stitching.
On one. Yeah.
Okay. Stay tuned. I'm so hard on my hands apparently. And I don't want to waste $60 at least on a manicure that will last me a day. Maybe half.
Got to get that dip manicure, baby. I got this manicure. I mean, check it out. Ooh. A month ago, over 4 weeks ago, and it's still perfect. And these are my real nails. And yeah, so it costs honestly around the same. It's probably within $5-$10 more than getting a normal manicure, which if you get a regular manicure, it's going to last you 3 days. Got to get gel, or the dip is better than gel.
See, and I'm not a girl enough to know the difference
too, you know?
So, okay. All right. Well, now we know the over under and dip
on how long my baseball manicure will last. That's place that bet.
We can add that bet on Vibes. How long will Kelsey's baseball manicure last? So with that, we will end the show, guys. Kelsey, tell the people where they can find you on the socials so that we can keep up with all of the nut grabbing and how long your manicure is. Yes,
I will share. I'm going to create that spreadsheet. I will share it soon so we can all place our bet on Vibes together. I am on Twitter at KBirdTweets, which if you're watching on YouTube, you can see on your screen right below you. I am going to do kind of like how you do, Susie, your All of the Balls edition, and then you cover the Astros as well weekly. I'm going to start covering the Cardinals weekly. So especially if you're a Cardinals fan, check that out. We'll do that as the season gets underway here. And yeah, you can find my weekly episodes of Peace, Love, and Baseball, as well as some merch that we're just kind of getting in the merch game, just kind of having some fun with. And yeah, I mean, obviously we're going to ramp up on all social medias just with interaction and stuff as we've got real live baseball happening.
I'm very excited.
Days from now. Can't wait.
Very excited about that, people. So excited. So yes, Bourbon and Baseball will be coming out with some sort of merch at some point in time. We will add that to the plate that is already overflowing with the things, but there will be merch. I really feel the A baseball shirt will be a very good overall team friendly.
Yes.
Not team specific. Baseball shirts. We will be adding that in some sort of time. We will do that. So, but yes, go follow Kelsey. I mean, the Peace, Love, and Baseball podcast is also very fun as it is anyways. And, you know, if you're a Cardinals fan, obviously, definitely go check that out. So, but with that, we will wrap it up. And side note, Kelsey, I didn't realize that the last spring training game between Houston was with the Cardinals and Lance Lynn was actually on the mound today.
Oh, we missed him. Okay. Well, we'll have to run that coverage back. And again, we're going to establish what is a verifiable nut grab. So maybe we can get it from today's game.
We will see that because apparently he has given up at least 4 runs, 4 earned runs
Great.
Maybe five, depending on who was on base when.
I'm going to be so glad that I have this to keep track of to keep me alive and in the stadium on opening day. It sounds great. Oh, yeah. 7-0. Astros there in the bottom of the fourth. Good.
Yeah. But Roycroft just gave up those last runs. But I don't know.
I got to go back and look. Track of nut grabs as opposed to home runs that he's giving up. We'll see which one.
I don't think they were all on home runs, though. That's part of the issue. No. Yes, there's singles here and there.
Yeah. He didn't even allow a home run. Wow. Okay.
So again,
good times.
I'm glad that we have this nutcracker.
7 hits, 6 runs, 2 walks, 3 innings pitched. No home runs.
That's progress. That's progress, though, because I think Lanson gave up the most home runs last season, right?
You know, I was going to say in our predictions when we did our Wednesday episode that I do predict that at least 3 of the Cardinals' 5 starters will be top of the stats in hits allowed, runs allowed, and home runs allowed, and absolutely nothing else for pitching statistics. At least 3 of them. So stay tuned. I've put it those down.
I feel like those are actual. I think those are actual bets that probably that people will take. So we're not going to add that to the bet on vibes.
No, we don't need draft queens vibes on our
bookie maker thing that gambling people do. We're not going to do that. But no. We may update that. We may update that just because.
We'll circle back. We can clip this in September and check in.
And I guess with that, we're gonna end the show.
Yay, baseball. You say it better than me, Susie, and you're real yay baseball.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so with that, we will actually end the show and we'll do the yay baseball. Woohoo. Okay.